Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHY Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're awfully glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Oh, it's good to be here, Dennis.
We are only now 3 weeks away from the general election, and there is plenty of campaigning still to come around Iowa, but we're going to begin with the results of the latest Des Moines Register Iowa polls on the senatorial race between Republican incumbent Chuck Grassley and his Democratic Party opponent Mike Franken, and on the gubernatorial race between incumbent Republican Kim Reynolds and her Democratic opponent Deidre DeGeer. First, the poll on the Grassley-Franken race, and Laura, it shows that Senator Grassley's lead over Mr. Franken has narrowed to three percentage points with less than 1 month to go until Election Day. This has to be a shocker.
This sent shockwaves through the election-watching community across the country. I was on Twitter Saturday night, and the national political reporters and forecasters were all talking about this poll for several reasons. First of all, as you say, Grassley, just with a three-point lead, 46% to 43%, but also an incumbent below 50% reelect number. That's always considered a danger zone for the incumbent, because remember, the incumbent is better known than the challenger. So the challenger often has a little bit more room to grow. Also, for the first time ever in the Iowa poll, Grassley's approval rating was underwater. 44% of Iowa adults approve of the job he's doing as senator and 48% disapprove. His approval ratings, when I started writing about Iowa politics 15 years ago, his approval ratings were routinely in the high 60s. Sometimes they were over 70%. So partisanship has really increased, and Iowans' views of Grassley are more negative than they've been in a very long time.
Mr. Grassley is 89 years old. He is seeking his eighth term in the Senate. And this poll suggests that his age is now working against him.
Yes, this was a big problem, especially among the independents in the sample who now support Franken by an 11-point margin, that when asked, what do you agree with more, that Grassley's long tenure is an asset for Iowa or that his age is a concern? And 60% said that his age was a concern, and less than a third said that it was an asset. His longevity in the Senate was an asset. Grassley has been running some campaign ads that talk about his clout and talk about how he would be one of the most senior senators if reelected, and that does not seem to be resonating very much.
So Mr. Grassley in this poll is winning among evangelicals, rural residents, men, Protestants, those 55 years old and older, those without a college degree, and those who live in towns. The typical Republican look in Iowa. Franken, on the other hand, winning among city dwellers, those with no religious affiliation, those with a college degree. This is how it's breaking down across the state.
It is. And I learned this week that the Franken's campaign is going up on the air in Sioux City. Chuck Grassley has already been advertising in Sioux City. That reaches Northwest Iowa, the most Republican area of the state. And Franken has yet to introduce himself very much to voters in that area. So that's going to be really important for Grassley to try to maximize his vote in that fourth district area. That's going to be his strongest turf. On the other hand, the fact that early voting is now only 20 days instead of it used to be 40 days, arguably Grassley would have been better off if we still had a long early voting period, because now Mike Franken has a little bit more time to get himself known before many people vote.
So think about this. This is a shocker across the country. Everybody assumed Mr. Grassley was going to win, if not as much as he had in the past, perhaps he still win. But now with the Senate in a 50-50 tie, and it's going to come right down to the wire, this race, this one, could determine the control of the Senate.
And this hasn't been on anybody's radar. And I really question, the election forecasters have always had this race as a solid Republican or safe Republican all year. And I questioned that in July, because Ann Seltzer's poll for the Des Moines Register in July showed that Chuck Grassley was only 8 points ahead. So to me, that's likely Republican, not safe Republican, especially since the senator was not over 50% reelect number. So I really don't know why it was not on anybody's radar, but this would be an absolute shocker. And certainly it would give the Democrats a much better chance of holding the Senate if Mike Franken could pull off a surprise here. I do want to mention that there have been a couple of other recent polls. One of them was a partisan, a Republican polling firm that showed that a large larger lead for Senator Grassley. However, Ann Seltzer is considered one of the best political pollsters in the country, and that's why people were paying such close attention to this survey.
Let's talk about fundraising. Here's perhaps another shocker. New figures out this weekend show that Mr. Franken outraised Senator Grassley during the just ended quarter.
Yes, and Mike Franken, most of that money has come from small donors. He really hasn't had a lot of support from that, not as much support from political action committees as certainly not as much as Senator Grassley has had. But he has spent a lot of money on social media and on digital advertising, and it does seem to be paying off with fundraising. Chuck Grassley has never had a challenger who's been able to match his fundraising and spending before. So that is something new about this cycle.
Now, Mr. Grassley still has more money in the bank than Mr. Franken has as we go to the last 3 weeks. He has about $4 million, Mr. Grassley does. Franken, a little bit more than a million.
Well, this was as of September 30th. Grassley's campaign had about $4 million. Mike Franken basically bet the farm on this race in September. He spent a lot of money on television in September, and I would argue that he really had no choice, because when you're the challenger and you're behind and you're not as well known, you have to spend that money to make yourself known. So he's banking. The Franken campaign announced this afternoon, that I'm talking about Monday, that they have raised $200,000 or more than $200,000 since that Des Moines Register poll came out. So they're banking on some good poll numbers, getting them some more money so that they can up their ad buy in these final crucial weeks. But he really did spend quite a lot in September.
The Franken Grassley race is going to be one of the most watched by national analysts as well as us on election night. Trust me, we're going to be all over this on election night on KHOI. Also, there was another new Register poll out this weekend. This one, much less of a surprise. We've been talking about this all summer. This poll shows that Kim Reynolds, the Republican governor, has a commanding lead over Democratic Party challenger Deidre DeGeer, 17 points, which is what it was in the first Des Moines Register poll, 52% to 35%. That's about as solid as you're going to get.
It is, and I'll tell you that, ironically, some Democrats were a little bit relieved. Relieved is probably the wrong word, but when the Senate poll came out, a lot of people had trouble believing the Senate race was that close. And so if the poll of the governor's race had come out showing a very close single-digit race between Kim Reynolds, who spent millions of dollars already, and Deidre Gere, who's only just barely up on television, that people would have just found it not believable, that maybe the whole poll just had a skewed sample. But we're talking about the same respondents in the same poll. And so if they only prefer Grassley by 3 points and they prefer the governor by 17 points, that starts to look more realistic. So that made people very optimistic about the Senate race. I think the biggest number for DeGeer in that poll was that 51% still don't know enough about the Democratic challenger to have an opinion about her. And at this late stage in the race, if that much of the electorate doesn't know enough about the challenger, it's really difficult to put together anything like a strong challenge. Remember, Fred Hubble had already spent more than $10 million by this point in the 2018 campaign.
So the path for Deidre DeGeer may be less than narrow.
Yes, I mean, I think it would just be very difficult. I mean, I heard a Democrat say, you know, if only we had a well-funded challenger, because when you look at 52% to 35%, it is a commanding lead, but 52% for an incumbent governor with all of the advantages and all of the spending, it's not that impressive. I mean, she got a little bit more than 50% of the vote in her 2018 race, and she hasn't built on that. I mean, if you're old enough to remember some of those Bob Ray reelects, I mean, he would have over 60% support. And so it's really not, in that sense, it's not as much a commanding lead as much as there's a strong support versus an unknown. And when you look at the numbers on the right direction, wrong track, 47% of Iowans think the state is headed in the right direction. I mean, that's not a great number for the governor. It certainly could be stronger, but she's fortunate that right now she just hasn't been pressed and she hasn't had to face a challenger who is able to get her message out to a lot of voters.
And very quickly, a couple of side notes here. The Register yesterday, the state's probably most prominent newspaper still, endorsed Deidre DeGeer. There was no chance they were going to endorse Kim Reynolds. They will endorse Mike Franken there. Is that going to make any difference?
I don't know how much newspaper editorials make a difference. They actually wrote two separate editorials. They wrote one endorsing Deidre Jere, saying that she had a strong vision for Iowa, and then another just saying that Kim Reynolds has emphasized divisive issues and it has ignored a lot of the state's most pressing problems. So it was almost an anti-endorsement. But Kim Reynolds didn't meet with the Des Moines Register's editorial board in 2018, didn't meet with them this year. They just published recently, one of their political reporters published a big profile of her, and she refused to sit for an interview. I'm not aware in my lifetime of any governor of Iowa who just routinely would refuse to grant an interview to the Des Moines Register. I mean, it's kind of surprising, but that is the strategy. And it seems like that, I think that a lot of newspaper editorial boards are going to be in a similar position.
Yeah. And we should just briefly mention, only briefly, that the governor and Deidre DeGere are debating tonight, their only debate. It's on Iowa PBS. I almost hate to mention this. It's on at 7 o'clock, which is, if you look at your clock, just about what it is right now. You can watch it later, though, on the replay on Iowa PBS.
IowaPBS.org. They make those videos very easy to find of the debates.
Yes.
And it's been typical in recent cycles that the candidates for governor in Iowa have debated three times. And Deidre DeGere wanted to have at least three debates, and Kim Reynolds only agreed to this one.
And one more side note, you reported last week that Iowans who qualify for federal food assistance, this has to do with the governor, received $141 million less in benefits from April through August after she ended the state's public health emergency related to the coronavirus.
Yes, the Iowa Hunger Coalition put out these numbers, and I had followed this story in March after the governor ended the disaster emergency proclamation, and they warned in March that this was going to lead to very significant cuts for the average household is getting $200 less in food assistance a month. So it's quite a lot, and food assistance tends to be an economic generator because people who qualify tend to spend the money that comes in right away so that it's spent on goods and services in the local communities. Right. And I noticed in this that when looking at the map that the Iowa Hunger Coalition put together, that a lot of Republican controlled states, including Texas, Utah, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio, and South Carolina, still have these extra food assistance dollars in place because they didn't completely end their COVID-19 emergency proclamations. It doesn't mean that they're requiring masks or doing any other safety measures, but just by leaving that proclamation in place, that allowed the USDA to keep giving their residents these extra funds that Iowans are not receiving anymore.
All right. We have so much to talk about tonight, and we're going to keep the next few minutes as simple as we possibly can. It's about money. And it was former California State Assembly Speaker Jesse Unruh, widely known out here decades ago, who said so memorably, money is the mother's milk of politics. Okay, let's talk about some mother's milk here. We have new fundraising totals for Iowa congressional races. Just the overview is the incumbents are raising more money than the challengers. Let's start with the first district.
Yes, and that is typical that incumbents, it's one of the advantages of incumbency, it's easier to raise money. So Marionette Miller Meeks, this is the first district, covers most of Southeast Iowa. She raised about $1 million as she benefited from, she had quite a lot of individual donations, but also about $280,000 came from PACs. That's one of the advantages of being an incumbent. She spent about $1.7 million, but she's been very frugal throughout this whole election cycle. So she still has about $2 million cash on hand, or rather she had that as of the end of the third quarter, September 30th. Christina Bohannon, for first-time congressional candidate, has really done quite well in her fundraising. She raised about $870,000. She spent more than $1 million, but she still has, as of September 30th, $873,000 in the bank. The big disadvantage for her is that the outside groups that were very involved in this race in 2020, spending millions of dollars, the outside groups on the Democratic side are basically not involved at all. So there are Republican groups that are spending combined about a total of $2 million, either supporting Marionette Miller Meeks or opposing Christina Bohannon, and that money is not being answered on the Democratic side.
In the second district, GOP incumbent Ashley Hinson versus Democrat Liz Mathis, they have both raised an impressive amount of money, but Hinson has raised considerably more.
She has, but Hinson all the way through this election cycle has been had a higher burn rate. That means she's been spending a higher percentage of what she raised. So even though she raised more than $1.1 million this quarter, and total she's raised at not just a little bit under $6 million. She only has $1.7 million in the bank. She's just has always had pretty high operating costs. And, but again, she is getting some outside help from Republican groups, and that is not being answered on the Democratic side. Liz Mathis, strong fundraiser. She's been in politics for a while, and this is, has been a targeted race. She got a little bit more than $1 million raised. And she still had $1.2 million left to spend. So she certainly has enough for a district-wide effort. But she, again, is not getting help from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and some of those other groups, House Majority PAC, that played so strongly in 2020 in this race. I want to also say that for TV in this second district now, this is the Northeast Iowa district, you can cover just about all the counties in the district by advertising in the Cedar Rapids market. There's a little bit that are covered by the Mason City area that are covered by the Rochester, Minnesota market, but mostly it's Cedar Rapids. Much more difficult for Christina Bohannon in the Southeast Iowa district because you've got some of the counties get Cedar Rapids stations, some get Des Moines stations, some get Quad City stations way down in the southeast corner. Lee County gets Quincy, Illinois. So it's much more difficult to blanket that first district with TV ads compared to the second district.
A couple of more congressional districts to go, but first let me say it's 15 and a half after the hour, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style. And now the third congressional district. This is a head scratcher to me. We've got Cindy Axne, Democratic incumbent, versus GOP's Zach Nunn. And Axne's raised a ton of money and not so much for Nunn.
Axne has always been a strong fundraiser since that first campaign in 2018. She works hard at it. And again, she now has the advantages of incumbency. So she raised about $1.3 million. And even though she's been spending pretty heavily on television, she does, as of September 30th, she had about $1.7 million in the bank. She also is benefiting from some of the outside help. There is a lot of money being spent against her. The Republican aligned groups are spending about $2 million against Cindy Axne, but Democratic groups have spent more than $1 million against Zach Nunn. So Cindy Axne has a little bit of air support. I know Cindy Axne is on the air not only in the Des Moines market, which covers the bulk of the population of the third district, but also there are some counties in Southwest Iowa that get Omaha TV and some counties in Southeast Iowa that get the Ottumwa-Kirksville market. And Cindy Axne can afford to advertise fairly heavily in those, whereas Zach Nunn's campaign, not so much.
And in the fourth district, very briefly, nobody expects this to be competitive. And indeed, in the money thing, GOP incumbent Randy Feenstra has raised a total of nearly $2.5 million during the campaign. Democrat Ryan Melton has raised a total of about $40,000. That's going nowhere for Melton.
It's just really tough. Such a hard district. Donald Trump won that, carried the district by more than 20 points. Very difficult for a Democrat to get any traction there. Even J.D. Scholten, who was the candidate in 2020, raised quite well, but didn't crack 40% of the vote. So it's just difficult. Randy Feenstra, I just don't see anything going on. I don't know what he's doing with his campaign funds. I know he's given some of it to other Republican committees to use on more competitive races, but he just doesn't seem to be holding a lot of campaign events. He doesn't seem to have a presence on television. So it's interesting. You would think that he would use this advantage to really build up his name ID in case he ever has a primary challenge.
Yep. Okay, let's go back to the second congressional district. We've talked about money now. We should say that there was going to be a second debate. The first one was last week. We're about to talk about it. There was going to be a second debate between Ashley Hinson and Liz Mathis coming up this week, Tuesday night. But Ms. Hinson, unfortunately, has been hospitalized in Cedar Rapids for a kidney infection. That debate has been canceled. Of course, we wish her well, and wish, as does Liz Mathis. We all hope she will recover. But they did hold that debate last week. And it was on KCRG-TV. Incidentally, it's where they both worked as broadcast journalists for years. It was seen across the state on several stations. And they both tried to paint the other's position as extreme on abortion.
Yes, I just want to say briefly, of course, we wish Ashley Hinson well. Her office did release a statement today saying that she was somewhat improved, but she's going to spend the second night in the hospital. So
indeed,
that's why the debate was canceled for tomorrow. Yes, that debate, I don't know that I've ever seen a political debate that moved as quickly. It was an hour long And they go through so many topics. It was at a breakneck pace, but you could tell that Ashley Hinson and Liz Mathis both have many years of experience on television, and they were very well prepared. They had both clearly done a lot of debate prep. They were ready to try to bring the conversation around to their points. So on abortion, as we've discussed, I think in past weeks, Ashley Hinson emphasized that she has supported, that she's pro-life, but that she has supported exceptions to abortion bans, and said that Mathis is the one who supports an extreme position on abortion, allowing abortions up to birth. And whereas Liz Mathis has said Hinson co-sponsored bills that didn't have any exceptions, personhood bills, and also mentioned that that it's just not true, that it's not accurate to say that she supports abortion up until birth, because third trimester abortion has been illegal for a long time.
Let's cut to the chase on all of this. With all the Democratic candidates virtually across the country, the issue is abortion. For virtually all the Republican candidates across the country and in Iowa, it's inflation. And that's certainly how it played out in this debate.
Yes, inflation, gas prices. Ashley Hinson, like many Republican candidates around the country, have been emphasizing that, have been blaming the Biden administration and the spending by the Democratic Congress for the inflation, which, you know, economists disagree on what's causing the inflation. It is an issue basically in the entire world, not even just the Western world. So part of it is a supply chain backup. But Liz Mathis was talking about the good work that the administration had done to try to get some of the prices down, to try to deal with the supply chain backlog. And infrastructure was another big issue in that debate. Ashley Hinson has talked about how she has helped get dollars to the district, bring dollars home. She, as a first-term member of Congress, has a seat on the Appropriations Committee, which is rather unusual. And she talked about some of the specific things she got funded, whereas Liz Mathis kept saying that a lot of that money came from bills that Ashley Hinson voted against. Either it came from the American Rescue Plan in early 21, or it came from the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which Ashley Hinson also voted against. And a refrain that the Liz Mathis campaign has been using a lot on social media is that Ashley Hinson voted no, but took the dough and is now taking credit for that money that she opposed.
And you mentioned something that I'll bring up again. You said there was a very fast-paced debate. I think, and I've been in broadcast journalism for 40 years in television and radio, that the two most accomplished performers last week were Ms. Hinson and Ms. Mathis. They clearly were very comfortable in front of the cameras. They anticipated the camera changes, et cetera. And it appeared to me that the anchors were really trying to do an action news format. Let's just get this going very fast, very fast. Don't allow them to say anything. Well, you got to, at some point, folks, allow a candidate to say something. And I thought that debate almost was a disservice to both of those women. I did.
They didn't allow for an exchange. And that's why I was looking forward to the Iowa press debate on Iowa public television, because they do tend to allow for a little more back and forth. They don't get through as many topics in the hour, but they allow for more exchanges. And so I thought, well, this will be interesting because they'll delve more into a fewer topics. But as we mentioned, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we could talk about some of the ads. We're running close to the edge here. I want to get through a couple of other things here. So let's skip down on the format here, Laura, to a couple of issues involving President Trump and then the two major issues. Of course, the president is going to be subpoenaed, will be subpoenaed, perhaps has been subpoenaed by the January 6th committee. How do you see this playing out among Democrats and Republicans in the races in Iowa? Will it have any impact?
I just don't think that this is an issue people are voting on. I don't know what the ratings were, how many people were watching last week's January 6th committee hearing. I think that Trump, the likelihood of Trump actually testifying before the committee, very minimal.
Zero.
Especially if, assuming Republicans take control of the U.S. House, which they're favored to do, that committee is certainly going to be dissolved. And it's unlikely that much will come of it. I just don't hear, when I go to Democratic events, I don't hear a lot of people talking about that as an issue that's relevant to the races. It seems like, as you said, abortion, inflation, gas prices, though, and at the state legislative level, education, mental health, those are the issues. And Donald Trump just, it doesn't seem to be as big a factor in this election.
New York Times has a story that appeared online on Monday afternoon. We're going live on Monday night, probably going to be in the paper tomorrow, Tuesday. And it has Democrats perhaps perplexed and fuming. It reported today, and this was an extensive survey, and the Times is known for doing extensive surveys, that Republicans, and I'm going to quote some of this now, are entering the final weeks of the contest for control of Congress with a narrow but distinct advantage as the economy and inflation have surged as the dominant concerns. 44% of Americans now say economic concerns are the most important issue in this campaign. 5% say abortion is. That is an amazing poll.
It is. I mean, it's just one poll. This is a poll, again, of the what's called the generic ballot, where they just ask people across the country, do you plan to vote for a Democrat for Congress or for a Republican? And the generic ballot polling has been very competitive all year. A lot of polls have shown it close to a tie, some with a slight Democratic advantage. This is one that showed a slight Republican advantage. I saw on what I would call election Twitter, a lot of people were picking this poll apart. It's one to throw on the pile. I mean, one of the things that raised some eyebrows was that this poll showed that women are evenly split on whether they support Republicans or Democrats for Congress. And that is not really consistent with any election in the last several decades. So usually there's a pretty substantial gender gap with women favoring Democratic candidates. And I also saw Dan Gild, who writes about the generic ballot fairly regularly, was saying that he thought the proportion of young people in the sample, voters age 18 to 29, it was about 10% of the sample. And that was lower than the percentage of young people who voted in the 2018 midterm election. And by some accounts, young voters have been registering in very large numbers since the U.S. Supreme Court ruling. So we'll see. I mean, if young voters are only 10% of the electorate in November, that would certainly be bad news for Democrats. But if young voters are a higher proportion, 14, 15%, that would be a good sign for Democrats in these congressional races. So really hard to tell. Again, Democratic candidates all across the country are going to be trying to keep abortion at front and center before voters, because they know that it across the country and in Iowa, what we've seen from opinion polls is that the majority of Americans don't support the U.S. Supreme Court's action.
So we have about 3.5 to go, and we're going to veer into early voting in Iowa. And the reason we're doing that is because it begins this Wednesday. This is when you get the chance to vote. So Laura, let's talk about how, first of all, who's eligible to vote?
U.S. citizens, you have to be a resident of Iowa, and that can include students who are in college full-time, full-time students in Iowa, even if their home state is somewhere else. You have to be at least 18 years old on Election Day, November 8th, on or before November 8th. Now, again, this is only 20 days of early voting now. Iowa used to have a longer early voting window, but it starts this Wednesday.
Now, when you head to the polls, you're going to have to bring some kind of ID.
That's right. So an Iowa driver's license is a valid ID. If it doesn't have your current address on it where you're registered to vote, you might want to, just to be safe, bring some kind of proof of address. That could be a utility bill. It could be some kind of a rental agreement, a deed on your house, and anything that shows that you live in the area where you're trying to vote. A U.S. passport, a military or veteran ID, those are also valid. But for Iowa State students, student IDs are not valid as voter ID. So you're going to need something other than your student ID to be able to vote.
All right. So what if I want to go vote early in person? What do I do?
All 99 county auditor's offices are going to be open during business hours on weekdays. Some of them are also going to have Saturday open hours as well. Some counties, and Story County, I believe, is one, certainly Polk County, they will have some satellite voting locations. You're going to have to check with your county auditors on when and where the vote early in person options are. But I think this is a good option. It often takes 10 minutes or less. You go in, you fill out one form to get your ballot. You fill out your ballot, you turn it in right there. And there are poll workers on hand to let you know if you forgot to sign the envelope or you forgot to seal the envelope properly. So there is less of a chance of a mistake. So voting early in person, a great option if you already know, if you can schedule a time to be at your county auditor's office any business day between now and November 7th.
And 1 minute to go. If you want to vote by mail, you have to request a ballot from your county auditor, but things have changed on when you have to get that thing back in.
Your absentee ballot request form has to be at the county auditor's office by October 24th. And when you get that ballot, it has to be back at the county auditor's office by 8 p.m. on November 8th. So I recommend that people get those ballots in the mail as soon as they possibly can, or hand deliver the ballot to the county auditor's office. That's even safer. But make sure they've changed the deadlines for getting those ballot request forms in. So the very last day the county auditor can have your ballot request form is October 24th.
Laura, with 40 seconds left here, this is one of those races. I've covered elections professionally for 50 years. I'm an old guy. This is one of those, oh boy, we don't know what's going to happen here, but we're all going to be holding our breath.
I think modeling the electorate is extremely difficult. I think any outcome between a Republican landslide and a not that bad election for Democrats and anything in between wouldn't surprise me at all.
How many years have you been covering elections?
Iowa elections since the 2000s, but elections generally I've been closely following since the 1980s.
Okay, and you're a young lady, so you started when you were about 4 years old. All right, we'll see you next week.
See you, Dennis.
We are out of time. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinion of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back in this same time slot next week when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, and entertaining about politics Iowa style. There's going to be a lot of it this week, so tune in. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. And between now and next time, truly, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.